You are now listening to a podcast made in collaboration with the Copenhagen College Radio.
Hey, y'all. Thanks for tuning in to episode 27 of the Social Media and Politics Podcast, bringing you expert insights into how social media is changing the political game. I'm your host, Michael Becetta, political scientist at the University of Copenhagen. If you haven't already, you can follow us on Twitter at SMNP Podcast and also connect with us on Facebook, facebook.com/Social Media and Politics Podcast. This episode is going to be all about sponsored Facebook ads, dark ads, hidden ads, targeted ads, micro-targeted ads, pay-to-promote ads. We don't really know what to call them yet because we don't really know what's going on with them. But what I'm referring to is if you're a public Facebook page, such that any organization or public figure, or really any citizen who wanted to create one, like I have with the podcast, then you have access to a whole suite of Facebook's advertising tools. It's pretty mind-boggling. I would encourage anyone who's interested to just go ahead and create a page and go look at the different ads that you can create. There's all types of different campaigns you can run. So whether you're trying to drive traffic to a website is one type of ad campaign. Whether you want to just create exposure for your page and get more reach. And I guess these are all worked into different algorithms and the way they're shown to people. You can select, for example, whether that post, that ad will be on your page or whether it's only going to show up in someone's newsfeed. And you can also select by different audiences. So you can really hone in on exactly who you're trying to reach based on, you know, their age, their gender, where they live, by zip code, their interests, their jobs, and you can create all these different combinations that really give you a pretty honed audience, which is, from what we've learned from previous episodes in the series, this is why Facebook is king for advertising. This is why, during a campaign, a lot of the money flows into Facebook because they have the best advertising tools. But we really don't know how campaigns are using them, and that's because a lot of times you have to be the person that a political party is trying to target in order for you to even see these messages. So how can governments, academics, interest groups monitor what campaigns are doing and also how much they're spending on digital advertising? So ahead of the 2017 British elections, a project was founded called Who Targets Me? And basically what it is a Chrome extension that you can sign up to that will give your Facebook data to the extension, and they'll be able to track which ads are targeting you and build the database and then bring to light some of the strategies that political campaigns are using. And so my guest today on the show is Sam Jeffers, who is the co-founder of Who Targets Me, and he's also the proprietor of a digital marketing firm called The Shop, and has previously worked for Blue Stake Digital. Sam and the Who Targets Me project has been featured in several media outlets, most notably the New York Times. And if you'd like to find out more about the project and the Chrome extension, you can go to www.whotargets.me. Let me now welcome Sam to the show, who joins us via Skype from London. Sam, thanks for taking the time out, and welcome to the Social Media and Politics Podcast.
Hello.
So I've given our listeners a little bit of an introduction into Who Targets Me, but can you tell us in your own words what Who Targets Me is all about?
Yeah, I think we are very interested in how paid media on Facebook is being used in elections in the UK. So after the 2015 election, there was a lot of interest and a lot of claims made for how effective Facebook ads were, particularly by the Tory party here. So, you know, they spent upwards of £1 million on Facebook in that campaign, whereas the Labour Party spent less than £200,000 on Facebook in that campaign. And after their win, they talked a lot about how they were able to reach into specific constituencies where they felt they had targetable voters, advertise to them and to no one else. And that essentially the reason they won kind of almost by surprise was because they had a tactic that no one could really see. And I think that was in one sense why I particularly was interested in this, because of that kind of imbalance in tactics. And, you know, the Tories traditionally have more money and are therefore more able to kind of experiment and try, you know, things that involve paid media. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to have a look at that. And then I suppose after the 2016 referendum result, which again was something of a surprise, and where the Leave campaign again particularly sort of claimed a great victory for Facebook advertising as part of their win. Some of what happened in the 2016 presidential election in the US as well, around fake news, around sort of false claims, around some of the Cambridge Analytica stuff, around sort of micro-targeting at very large scale. All of these things seem to suggest it was about time we had a look at how this stuff was being used by campaigns and you know, is there a way to do that?
And what type of ads are we talking about here? I mean, we'll get into what you found from the 2017 British elections, hopefully a little bit later on. But I mean, is there something that sets these dark ads or targeted ads apart, these pay-to-promote ads? Is there something that you notice that's different from what the party might post publicly?
So not that different. And I don't know whether our election here was actually sort of cleaner or less interesting or more traditional in a sense. I mean, I think what we were expecting to see was more variation than we did. I suspect that, you know, there are some constraints on parties here in the sense that, you know, they're organizations that are essentially thrown together on very short notice. You know, this election was called, you know, 6 or 7 weeks notice. Mm-hmm. No one knew it was coming. So no party was really prepared for it. They didn't have the staff on board. They hadn't made all the stuff in advance. They probably didn't have great data. You know, all those types of things contribute to it being actually, you know, a lot less dark, as it were, than potentially we were expecting. I suppose the thing that's different is that, you know, you're looking at, you know, so for example, the Tories would spend a lot of time talking about their national message. You know, Theresa May is strong and stable. Mm-hmm. You know, we can negotiate Brexit were the sort of two themes of their, the more positive side of their campaign. And that they could push those much more heavily in places where perhaps they have no ground game, where they have no volunteers, no staff to speak of. And again, it sort of changes the balance of elections in that respect. And I think, you know, they probably spent upwards of £1.5 million, £2 million in 6 weeks on Facebook. And I think it was primarily to do that in seats in the north of England where they don't have a lot of organizational strength. So I think those sorts of things, less dark, but more this ability to sort of fix problems in your organization becomes one of the interesting themes about it.
Yeah, that is interesting. And I'd like to ask you a little bit about your previous experience with Blue State Digital, which is you know, obviously this data-driven type of marketing firm that has been working with campaigns. And I was reading that on your bio, you have worked with some political campaigns. So do you have any experience with working with these pay-to-promote ads?
Yeah, it's not really my background. I think, you know, ironically for this project, you know, and so in a sense, the project has been a bit of an education. I mean, I follow politics here and in some other places quite closely, you know, understand the mechanics of political campaigns and how those are played out on digital to some extent. But when it comes down to the absolute nitty gritty of you know, buying Facebook ads to achieve certain outcomes, you know, I've been kind of learning on the job over the last 8 weeks. But it's been interesting because I think there was so much talk about paid tactics for this campaign that it almost went under the radar that the sort of earned and owned tactics, you know, building a good email list and raising money from it and you know, mobilizing a grassroots support to promote your message for you and so on has kind of gone under the radar until the result. You know, so there's a lot of focus on this sort of use of money. But in fact, it seems in the result, at least, was kind of counteracted by people's ability to sort of share content on Labour's behalf or to chip in £20-30 to pay for the campaign and stuff. So, you know, it's been interesting kind of then looking at it from that more holistic perspective and seeing its role in campaigns overall.
Right. And from the press I was reading about Who Targets Me, it seemed that one of the motivations for the project is to kind of be able to see how much money is actually being spent in order to corroborate that with what the parties themselves are actually reporting. Is that the main driver to compare those figures, or is it more to find out about the content, or what do you hope to do with this data?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a few possibilities here, really, and you know, for us now, it's more almost a question of like analytical capacity and all the rest of it. But you know, I think one is the law being followed. You know, the UK election law puts quite strict spending limits on and differentiates between local and national spending. And so I think we were interested in part as to whether some of those rules were being stretched, because essentially the accountability around Facebook ads is very, very minimal. I mean, you have to submit the invoice, the amount of money that you gave to Facebook, but you don't have to tell the Electoral Commission here anything about the content of the ads or the targeting of those ads. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that line between national and local spending is very, could easily be abused, let's just say, in a campaign. So there's one thing about money. The other is just, yeah, the volume of money. I mean, if you're talking, you know, here where we don't have a terrific history of, you know, obviously no TV advertising in the UK, people generally don't spend lots of money on billboards and posters and that type of thing. You know, suddenly we have this avenue where almost unlimited money can be funneled into it by comparison to traditional expenditure. And that's a really interesting thing and a really interesting shift of tactics. And particularly if the promise is that you can target and reach just those voters you need to win the election, you know, does that change the way we debate? Do we need to have public debate anymore? Or do we just have these kind of private, narrowly focused retail offers for specific groups of voters and so on? So I think we were interested in that kind of character. I think we were interested in the content of the ads themselves. You know, were the claims made true, and how might people be held accountable to those claims later on, true or not? You know, if I send you a leaflet through the post or something, you know, I can keep that and hold you to account for it 3 years later. If I put up a Facebook ad that disappears the day after the election, that's a much harder thing to do. And so we were interested in kind of capturing as many of those claims and offers as possible. And then I think the final thing, you know, would be to over a period of elections to actually work out how effective Facebook is as a campaigning tool. You know, does it achieve, you know, returns for parties? Is it worth spending millions of pounds, or should that money be spent elsewhere doing something else? So, yeah, I think there's a range of projects here that really are only possible by virtue of capturing the volume of data that we've been able to capture. I think previous efforts have involved people sort of sending in screenshots of Facebook ads or trying to kind of do some sort of forensic financial analysis on the invoices or something like that. Whereas I think now we have at least some sense of the scale of what was happening, the number of ads that were being put out there, what those ads were achieving in terms of view counts and clicks and those. It's really more about just trying to work out how we get all our data analyzed and make it better in the future.
Yeah, it's an interesting point you raise about accountability, because I remember I did a study on there was a pair of debates in 2014 between Nick Clegg and Nigel Farage, and Nick Clegg would come out and he would hold up leaflets, you know, on the televised debate saying, you know, look at what your party said in this by-election. And I guess with digital ads, it's more difficult to capture. I hadn't thought about that angle, but kind of cataloging these digital artifacts and being able to hold politicians accountable, I think, is a super interesting motivation. Let's get into the technical side of things a bit. What exactly does this Chrome extension do, or how does it work?
Yeah, so you install the Chrome extension and essentially it looks at, you know, the underlying code of your Facebook page, and ads are tagged differently to posts. So we're essentially able to extract the tags of the ad post. And then that all goes into a database, and we categorize the advertisers as being political, non-political, you know, which party, et cetera, et cetera. And then once we do that, we're able to sort of play back the political ads an individual has seen to them. So they get a kind of bar chart showing essentially, you know, how many political ads they've seen and from which parties. But also are able to do then some national stats and kind of dig into that in a bit more detail to work out who's doing what where.
Mm-hmm. And did I read correctly online that this was programmed by a 19-year-old?
Yeah, so Louis's 19.
That's crazy.
The whole project came together in a pretty crazy way in that there's an organization here called Democracy Club that's very interested in sort of, you know, civic democracy technology projects. And they held an event two nights after the election was called where people could kind of pitch for help on projects. And I'd wanted to do something around these Facebook ads for a while. And so I went to this event and pitched it to a room of people I'd never met before and didn't know. And Louis happened to be there and kind of noticed the project. And we didn't actually meet, but he went home and basically built it that weekend. You know, from then on, we were kind of up and running, and it was a case of trying to work out how to get people using it, you know, that we proved that it worked. It was just about, can we get enough people to get us a decent sample of what was going on?
Mm-hmm. And is it, can you talk a little bit about the team? Because I was reading on your website that you have, you know, some sort of analytics team, also partnered up with the LSE. Do you have an idea about what type of analytics you're trying to do? So you have political and non-political posts, but are you running that against, for example, electoral maps or marking them by constituency and seeing what the politics are in each, or the polling figures in each district? Or, you know, what type of analytics are you guys doing, basically?
Yeah, I mean, we had, I think, you know, so what we've been able to capture is a really big data set of, I can't remember, you know, it's something like 3 million ad impressions or something in the UK, of which a relatively small proportion in the end were political, but, you know, enough to be interesting, where we can see things like, obviously, all the content of those ads. So there's some opportunity if someone wants to do some, you know, text-based analysis or some sort of, you know, tagging, coding of that type of thing to look for themes and trends there. You know, that could probably also look into things like the engagement with those ads. So, you know, likes and shares and comments and all that sort of stuff, which we have some data on. And again, you could potentially look at what the public seem to be interested in. But then there's also stuff, yeah, exactly, related to kind of the political geography of the UK. So, you know, we were asking people for their postcode, which allows us to put them in a constituency. That would then allow us to look at, for example, how Brexity the constituency is. And so was there a difference between more Brexity and less Brexity constituencies in terms of A, the content, and then B, the volume of the ads? The same is also true of the marginality. So how winnable a seat is for a particular party, you know, were they putting more effort into marginal seats? Now, this might seem sort of fairly obvious campaign-y stuff, but, you know, it also sort of, there are some interesting questions about what the best strategies on Facebook are. You know, should you be advertising directly into a constituency to reach just voters who live in that constituency? Or should you be advertising to a wider network of people who support the same thing as you, who might share your messages broadly, and therefore you have the kind of social proof and validation aspect? Does Facebook reward broader targeting, i.e. you'll get your ads more cheaply if you don't do this incredibly narrow targeting? And so therefore, actually, you might see effort sprayed around the place a bit more, but ultimately for the party, the outcome might be better, even though it looks to us to be sort of less targeted and less efficient. So I think there were, you know, some elements there in terms of analysis, but a lot of what we were doing during the campaign was quite ad hoc, really, because it was designed to help tell a story of how these were being used as a political tool rather than as a, you know, big piece of analysis at that stage. You know, the thing that helped us get people interested in the project was just that sort of sense of you're part of the oversight of what's going on, and that the press will then talk about it more, and they will mention our name, and it will drive people back into the project. So we were really looking for, like, what are the juicy angles here? And working with partners like the Bureau of Investigative Journalists, who are a group of independent journalists here who kind of work on bigger journalistic projects, they were helping us find the angles and communicate those out to media outlets who would help kind of drive interest back into the project.
Right. And I mean, it's interesting, I think, that it's a voluntary sign up by citizens. And how many participants did you have for the British elections?
I think we had about 11,500 by election day. So, you know, and it ranged from, I think, three constituencies where we had nobody at all to, you know, 20 or 30 where we had over 100 people. And generally, we never had enough people in any one constituency to get a totally sort of perfect look at what was going on in advertising there. But it did give us, you know, over 10 marginal constituencies, you would pick up trends or themes about some of the approaches each party was using to try and sort of win votes or persuade people in those places.
Yeah, it's interesting. And also that relatively few of the actual sponsored ads were political, which is also something that myself and some colleagues find in some research on Brexit data and looking at Facebook pages of the media, that about a quarter of the posts that we looked at from the media were actually political. So broadly, this more commercial market. But do you have any plans to do anything with that commercial data? Is that part of the project as well?
I don't think it's part of the project here, just because it wasn't really our promise to our users. But, you know, it's clearly, you know, Facebook advertising is a interesting topic. You know, they're one of the biggest companies in the world. There seems to me, and again, we've not had relative, you know, very long at this problem, but relatively little transparency and accountability about that advertising, and relatively little what you suppose you'd call sort of competitive data for people about that advertising. Whereas, you know, Google AdWords is a pretty open market, and there's quite a lot of data on who's doing what, where, and which ads people are, you know, buying and all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, you know, there's potentially something interesting there, but it's not our sort of short-term goal. I think our goal overall is to now see if we can take the project to a few more elections. So, you know, we have obviously Germany, Italy, there's a referendum in Spain coming up, there's a Norwegian election, there's a New Zealand election. You know, there are plenty of places where Facebook advertising will be a tactic. And there are also some sort of different, you know, cultural preferences around how data is used and how advertising is used in those places, sort of legal differences as well. And so, yeah, just sort of starting to think, well, how can we take this project to other places, you know, partner with local university, for example, or a media outlet or something, so that we can kind of, capture the same data again, tell some of the same stories, but then have a bigger global data set potentially on, you know, effectiveness and utility of these ads.
Yeah, I'd be very interested to see how many people sign up in Germany, because I mean, that's a big election, but Germans typically are very wary of data privacy. So I don't know if they'd be more willing to sign up with their data so that you would have a better insight, or they would be more shy.
Exactly. I mean, the assumption would be that they've already signed up to Facebook. So, you know, at least a large number of people, even in a more sort of data aware society, have still signed up to Facebook. So,
interesting.
Yeah, we'll find out.
So as we're recording, we're about less than 2 weeks after the election, so not so much time to process this data. But do you have any insights so far in terms of patterns or kind of trends that you've observed just kind of off the bat or during the campaign?
Well, I think, you know, for the UK, mostly sort of just the stuff we've looked at so far is about the content of the ads, I suppose, rather than necessarily the targeting. But the Facebook clearly gives an opportunity to be more negative in your adverts than you would normally be in a UK campaign. You know, the Conservatives particularly spent a lot of time and money advertising on Corbyn's negatives, you know, his past support for, you know, this group and that group, and some of the statements on the economy, and, you know, just essentially trying to make out that he's not prime ministerial material. That was much more negative and kind of almost American in its tone and approach. And, you know, I think the reason that that is doable on Facebook is firstly because there aren't other paid channels really where you can do that. I mean, you can do it with leaflets, but there aren't that many other paid channels in the UK where you can do that. And the second being that because you can reach people you think might be receptive to negative campaigning and not reach the ones who you think will be turned off by negative campaigning, I mean, to the best of your ability, it kind of incentivizes going negative quicker, more directly, more repetitively, and that sort of stuff. So there's something in Facebook that in the kind of ability to do sort of targeted ads that encourages negativity. I suppose, you know, the other thing was just how late all the parties waited before doing anything, you know, particularly at scale or volume. They spent a lot of time testing, optimizing, checking that everything was good before really ramping it up in the last 3 days. And I guess that's to be expected, but, you know, it was interesting kind of watching, you know, A/B testing strategies kind of unfold and, oh, okay, well, that ad has now disappeared, so that one wasn't working for them, but this one has now popped up. So we think, you know, there's potentially some weakness on this issue, or they're worried about this particular seat. That type of thing was, I think, quite interesting. You know, yeah, longer term, I think, as you said, you know, we're looking at probably more like academic partnerships to help pursue some angles on this data. So, you know, people should feel free to come to us with almost research proposals, and we could give them a little sample of what we've got, and then they can kind of work out whether or not they think they can test a hypothesis with it.
Mm. Yeah, interesting. But I want to ask you a broader kind of conceptual question, which would be this concept of direct versus indirect ads. So the sponsored ads that you're collecting are coming from the official party accounts, the public pages. They'll have, you know, sponsored up in the corner. They'll have the party's logo. It'll be very, very clear that it's from this party. But then we also saw in this recent election, this kind of indirect advertising. There was that Captain Ska video, that the Liar Liar song, that was clearly political, but coming from a non-political organization. And this might be a little bit problematic in that these more indirect forms of advertising could be sponsored by organizations, you know, wealthy individuals, foreign governments. Do you think that's also at play, or how do you remedy that with the data that you're collecting on the direct targeted ads?
Well, I think it's an interesting thing because I think, again, like I was saying earlier, that people kind of missed that there was a campaign going on outside the paid digital piece, you know, that there was, you know, not everybody missed it, but there was, you know, essentially an expectation that paid was going to win the day one way or the other, and that the Tories sort of, you know, what they were calling sort of targeted ad blitz was going to, you know, take Labour apart. Yet on the left, there was a lot of people, you know, making and sharing stuff. Now, we didn't really see much evidence of any organizations who, you know, looked like they didn't really have a clear role to play in our election getting involved here. You know, that some of the fear about fake news or, you know, Russian involvement, for example, seems to have been a bit unfounded, potentially because, you know, people felt the Brexit issue was solved and there wasn't sort of much to go on the kind of, you know, for the right, as it were, to go on in the UK for this election. Yes, you know, it is both technically possible and very hard to detect if, you know, third parties are putting money behind things in order to persuade and swing votes. And here, at least, the penalties for doing so, if they can even be enforced, are trivial by comparison. If I want to spend £1 million on Facebook ads, and then at the end of it, for doing it wrong, I get a £20,000 fine, it's kind of no big deal, you know? So, you know, I think there's some questions there about both how the platforms allow political adverts onto them, also how the regulators here are able to understand what's going on, you know, is really, really important. And it does seem like someone needs to start getting grip on that because, you know, again, over the last 10 years or so, it becomes possible to make a video and have tens of thousands of people sharing it, meaning that millions of people see it for no money at all. And yet the regulatory kind of framework here is if you spend more than £20,000, you should be regulated in the election. You know, you should have to report back on your activity. If I can make a video for no money and have more reach than someone who is spending hundreds of thousands of pounds, like it seems problematic or potentially strange where suddenly you have this ability for everyone to become a publisher and everyone to, you know, reach lots of people. It is an interesting question. And again, when the platforms themselves seem to reward stuff that gets more eyeballs and therefore is potentially more, you know, controversial, provocative, all that sort of thing, is that really a kind of healthy, you know, underpinning for democratic debate in an election? And, you know, my instinct is not, you know, I think I started this project with the feeling that Facebook was relatively unproblematic, but there were problematic people doing problematic things on Facebook. I may now have come around to after this election that there were fewer people doing problematic things on Facebook, but that Facebook is more of a problem. So that sort of shift about what their algorithm does and how it promotes specific content, I think, is an issue. And then how people can stick paid money behind it and there's really no oversight or regulation behind that is also an issue.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, we've seen how, you know, since about 2012, Facebook has really, for public pages, cut the organic reach that these pages do have in order to incentivize them to pay to promote. But you're right in that we don't know exactly what political parties are doing and what effect this is having on public opinion. So I think it's a super fascinating project and I wish you all the best of luck with it. And thanks for taking the time out and telling us a little bit more about it.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you.
I've just been speaking with Sam Jeffers, co-founder of Who Targets Me. To download the Chrome extension yourself, you can go to www.whotargets.me. And that's a wrap for this episode of the Social Media and Politics Podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in, subscribing, telling a friend, tweeting us at SMNP Podcast, swinging by the Facebook page, Social Media and Politics Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Becetta, signing off from Copenhagen. See you next time.